taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution and we teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. I have an interesting question for you. Do words matter? More specifically, do the definitions of words matter? Does their meaning matter? And if so, how do we find it and find those meanings and use those meanings? Now, if you follow the Constitution Study for any length of time, you know I believe that words matter and that I am very adamant about using the right words and the right terminology. See, words can be powerful. Words can induce emotions and actions. And if we are using the wrong words or using the wrong definitions, well, then those words can invoke or can incite actions that maybe aren't the right ones. Now, I have been adamant. I use, whenever possible, Webster's 1828 dictionary when I'm trying to understand the Constitution and our founding fathers, because it was written by Noah Webster, a contemporary of that time. He was compiling the words for his dictionary during the fight in the Revolution, during the years after, as we were going through the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Therefore, I believe he has the best understanding of that. But what happens when the understanding of a word is challenged, when we start using words because they invoke an emotion? Now, this came to light recently with a comment I received from one of my listeners. A viewer sent me an email about the influx of illegal aliens on our southern border. The question of whether or not this constituted an invasion and thereby requires a response of the federal government under Article 4, Section 4, is one worth taking a closer look at. Not only the question of does this constitute an invasion, but what are the consequences of such a point of view? Under Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution, the United States is required to guarantee to the states certain things, including the protection against invasion. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and, on application of the legislature or of the executive when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence. The first thing we need to determine is, does the influx of a large number of illegal aliens constitute an invasion? Well, we start where we start with all definitions of words, with a dictionary. Invasion is a noun, a hostile entrance into the possession of another, particularly the entrance of a hostile army into a country for the purpose of conquest or plunder, or the attack of a military force. Are the people who are illegally crossing our border hostile? Some of them are. But the vast majority don't appear to be so. Hostile is an adjective, belonging to a public enemy, designating enmity, particularly public enmity, or a state of war, inimical as a hostile band or army, a hostile force, hostile intentions. While their presence is problematic, that does not make them a public enemy. The enemy is a noun, a foe, an adversary. A private enemy is one who hates another and wishes him injury or attempts to do him injury to gratify his own malice or ill will. A public enemy or foe is one who belongs to a nation or party at war with another. The vast majority of those illegally crossing our borders do not belong to a nation or a party that is at war with the United States. Neither do most of them make up a hostile band or army. Now, regardless of their size, these people do not constitute an invasion as our founding fathers defined it when they wrote the Constitution. Neither, by the way, do they meet the legal definition of an invasion. From the Free Legal Dictionary, an invasion is the entry of a country by public enemy making war. So if this dramatic influx of illegal aliens doesn't meet either the constitutional or legal definition of invasion, what is it? Well, let's start at the beginning. Constitutionally speaking, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4 gives Congress the power to establish an uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcy throughout the United States.
Notice, Congress has the power to set rules for naturalization, the act of becoming a citizen, but not for immigration or visitation. Immigration is becoming a permanent resident, while visitation is a temporary one. This means that according to the 10th Amendment, the power to regulate immigration or visitation is retained by the states. Therefore, this should be primarily a state issue. However, decades ago, the states allowed the United States to usurp their control over immigration into the states, which leads us to the next point on our journey. Since the states now expect the United States to regulate immigration, Congress has passed numerous laws to do so. Why is this important? Because each and every member of Congress has been hired by the American people to represent them, either in the House of Representatives or for their state in the Senate. Now, whether you like our country's immigration laws or not, they were created by employees of the people who represent them and exercise their sovereign power in the people's name. Congress, though, is not the only branch of the federal government responsible for this mess. See, while Congress is tasked with making the laws of the United States, the president is required to faithfully execute those laws. Since the state legislatures have decided to allow their citizens to determine who their state should vote for in the presidential election based on their political party affiliation, the men who have held the office of president in the last several decades got there by the will of the American people. So there are two branches of the federal government that are part of this mess: Congress for the laws they have passed, and the president who has failed to execute those laws. The fact that millions of people have violated those laws without consequence is not entirely their fault. Yes, the illegal alien is responsible for the laws they have broken, but Congress is responsible for the bureaucratic nightmare that anyone who wishes to come here legally must go through. Also, the president is responsible for the incentive many of these aliens see, since there are effectively few consequences for breaking American law. Now, our current border crisis should be a surprise to no one. History is replete with examples of what happens when laws are not enforced. The rate of illegal aliens entering our country is directly correlated to the leniency shown by the presidential administration in office at the time. You would think after 50 years of observing this correlation, the American people would have figured it out. Apparently not. Even though this cause and effect has been readily observed throughout the United States, currently, there are two district attorneys in California facing recall because their failure to prosecute crime has led to an intolerable increase in those crimes. Businesses in these cities are closing because of the level of theft they are forced to endure without any redress, because prosecutors have decided to be derelict in their duties and not prosecute crimes they don't think are worth it. While many in California, and in fact America as a whole, are rightly angered by the current state of what is laughably called our justice system, there is one point they seem to have missed. Neither of the district attorneys currently facing recall in California made any secret of their stance on prosecuting what they often refer to as petty crimes. President Biden campaigned on the idea of allowing people into the country illegally, then dealing with them after the fact. He promised to suspend deportations and detention of migrant families and reduce room for immigrant detention. So why is anyone surprised that millions are taking advantage of the promises to be lax on enforcement of U.S. law? Now, before you start pointing your finger at President Biden and his administration, there's one very important point you need to consider. Knowing what President Biden planned to do when he entered office, tens of millions of Americans voted for him. The current state of our border crises is a direct result of the choices made by the American people. In other words, both President Biden and our alleged invasion are our fault. I believe there are two primary reasons behind this call to declare what's happening on our southern border an invasion. Now, first, there are those who want to use the term invasion to prod the federal government to act under Article 4, Section 4. I've even seen some people go dictionary shopping to find a definition that will promote their cause, ignoring the fact that the sense of the word they are basing their claim on is not the primary sense, even in the dictionaries they quote. I expect this approach to be another utter failure, since it basically is trying to shame the president into doing what he's already said he would not do. Now, if the president won't enforce current immigration law, what makes you think he's going to do so because you call it an invasion? He has paid no political price for his position, so why should he change just because you altered the language? Second, and of even more concern to me, is the attempt to define the surge of illegal border crossings as an invasion is an unconscious attempt to redirect the blame onto someone else. If this truly were an invasion, those entering the country would be considered hostile. There are many in this country that would use such a designation as an excuse to blame the alien for all of their problems. This is already the case in many locations. The lack of jobs, overflowing of our schools, hospital, and medical clinics are blamed on the influx of illegal aliens. Now, while in many cases that may be true, it's rather like blaming the Titanic itself for its sinking rather than its crew. Most Americans drive faster than the speed limit because they know there's little chance of actually getting pulled over. If you knew there was very little risk that you would actually be punished, how many of you would turn down the chance to rob a bank, cheat on your taxes, or even assault that idiot who cut you off in traffic and gave you the finger? Or what if you could earn 10, 20, 30 times more than you do today, and all you had to do was cross a border without permission or consequence? Would you do it? Yet there are some Americans eager to blame the illegal alien not just for violating our laws, but for the fact those laws are not being enforced in the first place. A law that is not enforced is a waste of time and energy. So who is ultimately responsible for the fact that our border crossing laws are not being enforced? Is it the alien who breaks those laws? Is it the criminal who takes advantage of the lax enforcement of those laws? Or is it the federal agent on the border? No. There are only two groups of people responsible for the fact that our border laws are not being enforced. The first is a group of politicians, both in Washington, D.C. and in our states, who are either refusing to fulfill their duties to enforce the laws of the United States or are willing to stand by and do nothing while it happens. The second is the American people who put up with them. President James A. Garfield said, "Now more than ever, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. If that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it is because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. If it be intelligent, brave, and pure, it is because the people demand these high qualities to represent them in the national legislature." What was true of Congress in the 19th century is also true of all elected officers today. We are responsible for their character. That means we are responsible for how we respond to their actions as well. We have chosen presidents who tried to enforce our border laws and others who did not. We chose the representatives and senators that not only wrote those laws, but funded their enforcement. And when those in the judicial branch acted badly by illegally meddling with the enforcement of the Constitution and laws of the United States, it was the responsibility of those we place in Congress to deal with their bad behavior. So if you're looking for someone to blame for the current state of our border, look no farther than your mirror. Rather than blaming the alien who broke the law, take responsibility for your choices that led to the fact that those laws aren't being enforced in the first place.
Now, I completely understand. I mean, the same thing happens in my mind. We want to make the issue seem as big as possible, as important as possible. We're trying to elicit a reaction. And I try hard to not let that overshadow what's actually going on, which is why when I hear people refer to this as an invasion, I'm sorry, it doesn't meet the definition of the word. Yes, it is a lot of people trying to come into this country. And yes, there are dictionaries that have added a sense to the word for invasion to be a large entrance of people. But that's neither its primary sense. It's not the legal definition, and it's not the definition that was used back in the 18th century when the Constitution was drafted, and the language about the United States protecting states from invasion comes from. And the thing is, I don't think we need it. I don't think we need that hyperbolic, that overexcited language. Because the truth is, yes, we have a problem with illegal aliens. We have a problem with illegal aliens primarily for two reasons. One is, America is awesome. People want to come here. You know, if you live in a country that people want to come to, it can't be that bad. You don't see people, you don't see a lot of people trying to, get into North Korea or Cuba. They're generally trying to get out. I'm old enough to have been a child of the Cold War. So I remember East Germany, you had the Berlin Wall. The Berlin Wall was to keep people in, not to keep people out. So the fact that we have a large number of people that wish to come to this country, either permanently or temporarily, is a sign that we're a good place to be. All the cancel culture and the CRT and the progressive, you know, name-calling to the contrary, America is awesome. Yes, we have our problems and we want to defend our rights, but still, this is where people want to come. But the other reason, as I mentioned before, is kind of twofold. Yes, we want to shame the federal government into doing its job, which is kind of a dereliction duty on our part, because if they're not doing their job, why are we hiring these people? It's not like these illegal migrants are a new problem. It's not like it just popped up in the last few months and nobody saw it coming. This has been going on for decades. And for decades, we've hired people that just don't seem to care. Whose fault is that? But it's also an easy way, I think, to point the emotion towards someone else. You see, if we are being invaded, then the hostility is coming from the other side. Now, I've met a lot of aliens. I've met illegal aliens. I've met legal aliens. They come here, for the most part, not out of hostility, but out of desire. They want to be here. They're not. There are some. I'm not a fool. There are people who are hostile to the United States, and they're coming here with bad intent. I mean, the 9/11 hijackers, many of them, I believe, overstayed visas, making them illegal aliens, and they were here with hostile intent. But the vast majority of the people I've met are not hostile to the United States. They want us here. They want what we have. But if we can make it a hostile, a conflict between us and the alien, it's an emotional ride, but it also distracts us. It distracts us from the problem we have, which is a disagreement between the American people and their government, and their governments, plural. Whether it's a disagreement between the border states and Washington, D.C., or the people of the United States and Washington, D.C. The point is, our representatives have created laws about people coming into this country who are not citizens. They've set laws and they've set rules. If those laws and rules are evil, or if they're just not working, if they're problematic, then the answer is not to blame the person, the alien. Let's fix the laws. And if our employees in Washington won't fix the laws, we don't fix it by punishing the alien for the fact that we won't hire people that will make decent laws. Now, yes, you punish them for the crime they've committed, for violating those laws, but we don't want to punish them for the fact that that our employees aren't making reasonable laws. But the other problem is the people we hire to enforce those laws are derelict in their duty. And again, we should not be punishing the alien for the bad actions of somebody else. Punish the alien for the laws they've broken and nothing more. But if you want to punish somebody for the mess we have at the border, it's real simple. It is those members in Congress who refuse to, who have either made ridiculous laws or refuse to fund the enforcement of those laws, the presidents, plural, who have refused to enforce those laws, and the American people who keep hiring them. I know we want to blame somebody else. It's human nature, but let's face it. We hired them. They are our responsibility. And these attempts to shift the blame, although I don't believe that is the conscious intent. I don't believe that people that refer to them this as an invasion are consciously trying to shift the blame. I believe it's a subconscious emotional reaction. But it doesn't change the fact that it misses the point. See, maybe it's my years in IT, but until you get to the actual root cause of the problem, you cannot fix that problem. And as long as we are fixing the symptoms rather than the problem, well, the problem never goes away. As long as we are fixing, you know, it's like treating only the symptoms of cancer and not the cancer itself. Sure, you can treat the symptoms and you can feel better, but you still have cancer ravaging your body. So I don't want to sound like I'm not calling people who do this names. I want to open the eyes to say, wait a second, maybe the root cause of the problem is not the aliens coming in, but it's the fact that we the people refuse to hire and hold accountable people that will enforce the laws, that will make laws we can agree with and will within the realm of the Constitution, and then enforce those laws. Because until we do that, until we take responsibility for the people we hire, you see, they're just like the aliens. They know that they don't have to do what they've promised. But they know that we won't hold them accountable for violating their promises. We know we won't hold them accountable for violating their oath of office. We have trained politicians over decades that all they have to do is bribe us with our own money, and we'll be more than happy to hire them again and again and again and again. We the people are ultimately the architects of this problem because we have allowed the states to divest themselves of their responsibility. We've allowed the federal government to do what it is not allowed to do. We have allowed our representatives in Congress and the executive that our states have hired to execute those laws to do so in a way that doesn't follow the law. We've hired them. Which means you can change the person sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. You can change the people sitting in Congress. But until we the people change how we choose our representatives, I don't mean different ways of electing them. I mean, how you decide who you will and will not vote for. What are the criteria? What are the standards you require for someone to hold office in your name? Until we change that, we're going to end up doing what Albert Einstein referred to as insanity, doing the same thing over and over and over again, expecting a different result. Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, if you want to find out more about this topic, I wrote this article. You can find it on constitutionstudy.com. It's called, Are We Witnessing a Southern Invasion? It has links to all the quotes I use, so you can find it and follow up, because I want you to not simply trust what I'm saying. I want you to go through and verify that what I am quoting is true. I hope you give me some level of trust, but I also hope that you verify what I'm saying. So again, head to constitutionstudy.com. You find the articles, the videos. You can sign up for the newsletter. You can find out about the tour that I'm working on for 2022. You can even support the work that we're doing over there at the Constitution Study. Help us spread the word. I'm getting more and more speaking engagements. And I don't charge for most speaking engagements. Unless I'm asked to speak in an event that people pay money to attend, I don't charge. All I really do is sell my books. So if you'd like me to come speak to your event or to speak to your group, I'm not going to send you a bill. Now, if you can help with travel, that is wonderful. But just contact me. Go to constitutionstudy.com and you'll find to where you can request a speaker. Simply fill out the form, and we can see if we can make it happen. I love going out and speaking to people. I have a grand old time. I would love to come speak to your group or speak at your event. Just give me some contacts and let's see if we can set that up. Now, the other place I'd like you to check out is HealthyCell.com. You know, keeping healthy is your responsibility. Sure, it involves eating right, getting enough sleep, all that stuff, but the foods we eat today generally don't have the same vitamins and minerals they used to. So we need supplements. We need ways to boost our health. Now, most vitamins that you buy in the store have not been upgraded since the 1930s. Well, Healthy Cell came along and they reinvented the vitamin to work at the cellular level to do things like boost your immune system or help you sleep better or focus better. Now, speaking of immune systems, I told you I'm going to be on the road. And you're on the road a lot, you pick up the crud. If you spent any time traveling for work or going to conferences, you know that you just pick up everything that's going around, you pick up. So what I do is I take Immune Super Boost by Healthy Cell. Again, it's a travel-ready gel pack. I throw some in my bag every morning when I, you know, while I'm going through my morning routine. I simply drink it. You can mix it in a drink or just take the gel directly. And it helps boost your immune system so you don't get sick. Whether that's the crud, the flu, the cold, it helps your body use its natural defenses to keep you healthy. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, Healthy Cell wants to make you an offer. See, Healthy Cell supports this program. So they've said, listen, if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout, they will give you 20% off your first order. They're, you know, without Healthy Cell, we may not have this program. So if you can go to Healthy Cell, you can try out these products. Just make sure, please, you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. It lets Healthy Cell know that you're an America Out Loud listener, and it helps you by getting you 20% off your first order. And if you're like me, once you've tried this stuff, you're going to want more. So once again, let's go to HealthyCell.com. Put whatever you want in the order, and at checkout, use the code OUTLOUD to get 20% off your first order.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today, we're asking, do words matter? Now, maybe it's just me. Maybe, call me pedantic, call me a pain. But if words don't mean a common thing, how do we communicate? You know, I'm often asked, am I Am I a conservative? Am I a libertarian? They ask me to put a label, and I try to eschew labels. Because the problem is, especially nowadays, well, labels don't mean the same things to different people. One person's conservative is another person's libertarian. One person's libertarian is another person's liberal. If we don't have a common meaning, then we can't communicate. Or more accurately, our communication becomes problematic. You know, so many things turn on an understanding of what a word means. It's one of the reasons why, and I've told the story before, I've studied the Bible for decades. I actually have made a habit over the last couple of decades to read the Bible every year. And there's one story in there that is, it's guided my life. And that is Acts chapter 17, verses 10 and 11. And the idea being, when Paul and Silas were in Thessalonica, the Jews that didn't agree with them caused all sorts of problems. So the Thessalonians sent Paul and Silas to a new town, nearby town named by the name of Berea. And in this city, they went to, you know, Paul and Silas went to the synagogue, and he said they were more noble, they were more fair-minded than those in Thessalonica, and that they listened with all readiness, then went back to Scripture to see if it's so. So when I started studying the Constitution, I did very much the same thing. I would listen to what people had to say, but then I would go back to the document to see if it was so. But as I was studying the Constitution, I realized there are a lot of words that could have slightly different meanings. So I went back to the dictionary. But I also know that dictionaries change over time. Dictionaries redefine words. So how would I know what Madison and Jefferson and Washington and Adams were thinking about if the definitions in the dictionary were shifting sand? So I found a dictionary created by Noah Webster back in 1828, and I love it for a couple of reasons. One, Noah Webster was a contemporary of the framers of the Constitution. He had been putting together spellers and other things. He was assembling his dictionary at around the time that they were drafting the Declaration, the Constitution, writing the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers. In fact, I understand that Noah Webster was actually asked to edit the Federalist Papers. So I thought it was a pretty good source. And that's one of the reasons why I get so pedantic. I get so critical about going back and understanding the words as they were meant by the people that actually drafted the Constitution, which is why this question of an invasion is so important to me. If we allow the words to be misused often enough, they become meaningless because you can't apply them to, you can't use them among different people and expect them to have the same response. Now, one of the things I noted in the article that I read to you in the first half of the program was that immigration is not a power delegated to the United States. Congress can set uniform rules for naturalization, but it says nothing about immigration, which means ultimately the states are responsible for their own immigration. Now, I know most of the states have said, no, the United States has simply assumed this power, and they go looking to the United States, but ultimately the states are responsible. So Texas, as you can imagine, has a large problem with the illegal immigration across their southern border, a problem that in recent months, the federal government, and in times past, this is nothing new, the federal government has failed to enforce their own laws to help protect them. Now, Texas has purchased or acquired somehow several of these 30-foot wall panels that the apparently the previous administration, Trump administration, had was constructing, and then the Joe Biden administration canceled. Well, they've purchased these, and apparently they want to start building their own wall. Yeah, see, Governor Abbott tweeted. He said, after Biden halted construction of Trump's border wall, hundreds of unused wall panels were left at sites like this one in Eagle Pass. Because Biden refuses to build the wall, Texas has obtained this material for free. We're using it to build the wall and secure our border. And that is their right. Now, I know there are plenty of people that are just pulling their hair out going, but Paul, immigration is a federal issue, not according to the Constitution of the United States. Since it's not a power delegated to the United States, the 10th Amendment says it either remains with the states, or if it's prohibited to the states, it remains with the people. So Texas is well within their rights, and actually I would say well within their responsibilities, to build a wall to regulate immigration into their state from foreign entities. They cannot do it between states. In other words, Texas could not take these wall panels and set a border between, let's say, Texas and Oklahoma, or between Texas and New Mexico. Right? That would be a violation of the Constitution. But between Texas and Mexico? Yes, they can do that. And I hope that people look at this and say, hey, wait a second. If Texas can do this, why can't other states? The answer should be there's no reason except for the fortitude of the politicians in those states and the willingness of the citizens of those states to back them. See, I've noticed over my lifetime that politicians are more afraid of their party and their special interest group than they are the people they represent. There's a rare situation where a politician changes course because of their constituents. And to me, that's a problem. But if you're going to expect if you live in Texas and you think this is a good idea, are you willing to support Government Abbott from the when he's attacked with slings and arrows for daring to defy the President of the United States or his administration and actually do what's required, probably by a state constitution? See, if Governor Abbott does this and nobody in the state supports him, then how long do you think he can keep it up? And if you're looking at other states, if you're looking at, California, Arizona, New Mexico, and you're saying, hey, we think this is a great idea, are you willing to stand behind him, your governor, when they do this thing? I'm reminded when I was meeting with my sheriff. You know, I told him, listen, it's important to me that, if I ever call 911, that your deputy knows their first responsibility is to protect the rights of everybody involved. If you do that, if you train them for that, I will support you. If they come out and do something that, in protection of my rights or in protection of my neighbor's rights or even protection of anybody's rights, and you are attacked for it, I will be there to help you. What do you need? Do you need a position paper? Do you need someone at a press conference? Do you need someone to testify before a committee? I will support you if you do your job to protect your rights. That is true for my sheriff. By the way, that is also true of my governor, Governor Lee. Now, I have no belief that Governor Lee actually listens to this radio program. I would be thrilled to find out that he does. I'd be thrilled to find out anyone on his staff does. But if Governor Lee is protecting the rights of the citizens of Tennessee, I will do what I can to support him. And we need to have this mentality of, if we're going to ask our politicians to protect our rights, we must support them when they do. So now that we've talked a lot about this question of invasion, there's another word that has been bouncing around lately. I've been commenting with somebody back and forth about the question of secession. And this actually came from a discussion on my article on nullification and the state's ability to determine what is and is not constitutional. Now, I know that we've all been taught that it's the Supreme Court that does that, but that's not what the Constitution says. because if you look up the term judiciary and judicial power, it is the it is to hear arguments in disputes. It is to apply the as Alexander Hamilton, the wisdom when reviewing disputes. But the one person said, no, if the state challenges what a law of Congress, that is secession. Of course, I pointed out that doesn't match the definition of secession, since they're not pulling out of the Union. They're actually enforcing the laws of the Union, since the Constitution is superior to laws of the United States, not made pursuant to the Constitution. But it got me thinking about this word secession and the fact that I find it interesting. There is no mode of secession defined in the Constitution. Now, this, of course, brings up a lot of interesting arguments and debates. I've said before that as parties to the compact, a state can leave the compact. Yes, it led to a war back in 1863, but it doesn't mean it wasn't constitutional. But it is not a... it truly means removing yourself from the Union. And there's a lot that's involved in it. Now, there's been talk about secession. For pretty much as long as I can remember, people have laughed. You know, Texas was a republic before it came into the Union. Therefore, it can secede. My point when it came down to this term of secession. And when I did a little research on this, I think it was James Madison I was reading, says, the idea of allowing states to secede would basically lead them to holding the Union hostage. Do what we want or we leave. Kind of like what the Confederate states did. Either you allow us to keep slaves or we're going to secede. We're going to leave. Again, like I said, that led to a war. I'm not saying that that was the right answer, the wrong answer. I'm just stating that's what happened. But what's interesting is there was a proposal for a constitutional amendment in the state of New Hampshire to allow it to secede from the United States. Now, this is interesting. This is the first time I've heard of this from one of the New England states. Not saying it doesn't happen, not saying it hasn't happened. First time I've heard of it. But I find it, again, I used to live in eastern New York. I lived literally on the border with Massachusetts. I spent time in New Hampshire. And I've always remembered their license plates, live free or die. Which always seemed to me to be this idea, this motto of, we're going to live free, and if we have to pull out, we're going to. So there was a proposal calling for a constitutional amendment to the New Hampshire Constitution that would allow it to secede from the United States. Now, I haven't read the proposal. So I'm not talking about the details. I just know that a proposal was made, and that proposal has failed. The House of Representatives of New Hampshire voted 323-13 to reject the proposal to amend the New Hampshire Constitution to allow it to secede. Now, as I understand it, if this proposal had gone forth, if it had actually been passed by the State House and the State Senate, it would have ended up at a ballot referendum, meaning the people of New Hampshire would have had to vote on the referendum, which would have read, New Hampshire peaceably declares independence from the United States and immediately proceeds as a sovereign nation. All other references to the United States in this Constitution, state statute, and regulations are nullified. In other words, there was actually, if this had proceeded, if this amendment had gone forward, there was a possibility that the people of New Hampshire could vote on secession. Of course, this brought up a whole bunch of turmoil and whatnot. What was interesting is the bill's primary sponsor, Representative Mike Sylvia, said that, sure, they would lose federal funding and other support from Washington, but there'd be benefits as well. New Hampshire residents would not have to pay federal income tax, and New Hampshire has no state income tax. He said, there are a lot of people that are very unhappy with D.C. The federal government has totally perverted the ends of our desired government, and it's clearly time to make a change. Now, listen, I don't know that secession is the best answer. I'm not saying it's not an answer. I'm just saying I'm not sure that it's the best answer because, yes, you know, New Hampshire would have, they wouldn't have to pay federal income tax. They wouldn't have to, but they also wouldn't get the federal tax money back. But that's actually, I think that's a good thing because of the way the tax system works. But it also means that, New Hampshire would have to defend itself from foreign invasion. Let's say Canada got crazy and decided they were going to invade New Hampshire. They couldn't rely on the United States Army to protect them. They couldn't, you know, they would have to now, all the treaties with other nations would now not apply to New Hampshire. They'd have to renegotiate that treaty. Now, maybe that's a good thing, maybe not. But there's a lot, you know, it is not a minor question. But is it the best answer to the problems that we have? Personally, I think it's like stepping on a rusty nail and deciding to amputate your foot. You see, it's the two ends of a spectrum. Does New Hampshire simply comply with every word that comes out of D.C., or do they secede? But there's a state in the middle. So Article 6, Clause 2 of the Constitution reads, "This Constitution and the laws of the United States which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding." Now, it's very important that you understand the hierarchy that this, the Supremacy Clause creates. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. It comes without qualification or prevarication. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. Laws of the United States are only the supreme law of the land if they're made pursuant to the Constitution of the United States, meaning Congress is following the edicts of the Constitution, which, by the way, includes our favorite amendment of the Bill of Rights, at least mine, the 10th Amendment, which says, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people." Now, notice how the language of the proposed amendment ended, that any reference to the United States in the Constitution of the state or statutes of the state are nullified. Nullification. It's a scary word. A lot of people get very scared about that. But look at what's happening. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. When Congress passes a law that is contrary that is not made pursuant to the Constitution, meaning it is not enacting a power delegated to the United States by the Constitution, or it is enacted in a way that violates a protection from that is listed in the Constitution, that law is not the supreme law of the land. So if you're let's start with a judge. If you're a judge in New Hampshire and Congress passes a law that is contrary to the Constitution of the United States, then that judge, when a case comes up involving that law, can just simply disregard the law. The Constitution must be supreme over the laws. It must control and regulate the laws that are created by Congress. And this is, by the way, the Supreme Court has agreed with this. In the case Marbury versus Madison, we read, "If then the courts are to regard the Constitution and the Constitution is superior to any ordinary act of the legislature, the Constitution and not such ordinary act must govern the case in which they both apply." So if the Constitution supersedes the acts of Congress, if Congress enacts a law not pursuant to the Constitution must supersede it. To change this is so anathema to the country that were, that we were created, that was created. We read in Federalist Papers 78 from Alexander Hamilton, there is no position which depends on clearer principle than that every act of a delegated authority contrary to the tenor of the commission under which it is exercised is void. See, that's the part that people miss. When we talk about nullification, we're not saying we are superseding your opinion. We're saying you've acted beyond your legal authority. That act is void. Alexander Hamilton goes on, no legislative act, therefore, contrary to the Constitution, can be valid. To deny this would be to affirm that the deputy is greater than the principal, that the servant is above his master, that the representatives of the people are superior to the people themselves. The men acting by virtue of powers may do not only what their powers do not authorize, but what they forbid. The very idea of allowing Congress to do whatever it wants in contradiction to the Constitution that created it is as insane as having the servant above the master, or having the representative of the people above the people. Our very mindset that says Congress is above the people is so anathema to Alexander Hamilton, it's crazy. But you see, that's the way we think of things. That we've been taught that whatever Congress does is supreme to everything, and that's just not true. Back to the Supreme Court in Marbury versus Madison. Thus, a particular phraseology of the Constitution of the United States confirms and strengthens a principle supposed to be essential to all written constitutions, that a law repugnant to the Constitution is void, and that courts, as well as other departments, are bound by that instrument. So let's loop back to where we started with New Hampshire and understand the word secession. New Hampshire literally wanted to cut off its nose to spite its face. Or at least, I should say, certain representatives in the legislature of New Hampshire wanted to cut off their nose to spite their face. All they have to do is look at our founding fathers, look at the actual language of the Constitution, look at the opinions of the early Supreme Court to recognize that when Congress passes a law that is repugnant to the Constitution, that act is void. It is empty. It is meaningless. We talk about nullification. In this case, we're not so much talking nullification as saying that is void. It's empty. And a state can simply say, and the states, plural, as parties to the Constitution, as the creators of the United States and its government, as the only adjudicators of its boundaries, because they're the only ones that can amend the Constitution, can tell their creation, no, you've gone too far. That's a step too far. We won't allow it. See, all New Hampshire has to do is say, Congress has not shown they have the authority to do this act. Therefore, it will not have effect in the state of New Hampshire. Now, they'll have to deal with the consequences of that because bullies don't like being told no. But history has shown that more often than not, when someone stands up to the bullies in Washington, they don't retaliate, at least not kinetically. They do things like withholding federal funds. Now, what I would like to see New Hampshire do is I'd like to see New Hampshire pass a resolution that Congress or a convention of the states amend the Constitution to repeal the 16th Amendment. Let's put the states back between the people and the federal government when it comes to collecting taxes again. Federal government can still pass all the taxes they want. They get appropriated to the states based on their population. But let the states be the intermediary. Let the states control the purse strings of the federal government. Then maybe the states won't feel the need to secede because they will have a leash on their creation in Washington, D.C. So when we're talking secession, we're not simply saying, listen, if any state disagrees with Washington, that's secession. That is not true. But neither should states say we're going to secede for political reasons. remember, when we declared independence from Great Britain, we seceded from that government. But we noted in the Declaration of Independence, prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. I believe those who proposed a secession in the New Hampshire legislature were trying to change a government for what is a, they were going too far. I don't think they needed to go that far yet. Now, I'm not a citizen of New Hampshire. I have no say in their legislature. But I would urge those that were calling for secession, or at least a consideration of secession, to look at the powers they have under the existing Constitution. Don't throw the Constitution out. That's what secession means. You're throwing the Constitution out. Don't throw it out until you've used its tools to protect your rights. Don't throw away all the benefits of the Constitution of the United States until you've used the tools to protect your rights and your sovereignty. That's why the term, you know, throwing out the term secession, it gets people's blood up. It gets people going. But I don't believe it solves the problem. And we can solve the problem without bloodshed if we, the people, will take responsibility for our employees in Washington, D.C., in our state houses, in our county courthouses, and in our city halls. And until then, much of what we're seeing is hyperbolic rhetoric meant to get people amped up. And rather than solving the problem, frequently makes the problem worse. Now, please be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. It is more important than ever that we do our part. Be part of the solution. Share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, do videos. Do everything we can to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Because if we leave it up to the politician, then we may end up cutting off our foot for a minor infection.
Stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.